Okay, we are back on the record. Mr. Broughton, you can begin your cross-examination.
Hey. Ms. Flath, I've handed you a document that was previously marked as Voight Exhibit Number 12. And as you can see, it represents a number of native plants and typical depth and feet rooting depths. And what I'd like you to do is take a look at that and let me know if you disagree with the depths represented as potential rooting depths for these plants.
At this time, I guess I'm going to, if you might recall, I objected to this.
Correct.
Exhibit, and so I'm going to renew my objection at this time. There's
correct.
No foundation. We have no basis for it from the person who presented it.
Understood. And I did admit the exhibit over the objection previously. It is in the record, but your objection is noted.
I don't know about this specific exhibit document that you're showing me. I am aware that some native species have deep-rooted systems, but I'd refer back to my previous testimony that no study has ever shown that it takes more than 48 inches to maximize productivity on reclaimed native grasslands.
But you don't dispute that some of these species root at a depth beyond 48 inches?
Correct. I don't dispute that some species do. I can't testify to the exhibit that you're showing me, but I am aware that some species do.
I'll refer you back to Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 3, which shows the reclaimed land productivity at the Freedom Mine.
Yes.
Are you aware that the total bonded area released at this mine is 5.6%?
I was not aware of that.
So the success rate you're showing here indicates a success rate on a very small amount of the land that has been disturbed and bonded at that mine.
It shows that it relates, or it shows the success of the land that was bond released, but I don't believe it shows anything about the success of the reclaimed land that has been disturbed there.
And the amount of land that was bond released is a very small percentage of the total land disturbed at that mine.
Based on what you're telling me, yes.
You referred to reference areas with respect to how you achieve revegetation success. And I believe your testimony was that there were three sites that would be outside the mining area that would be utilized for that purpose. Is that right?
Correct.
And are you aware that the Voights have previously communicated to Coyote Creek that at least one of these areas is one of their lowest producing fields on the ranch?
Mr. Steffen communicated with me that Mr. Voight had concerns about a reference area in Section 12. And what I told Mr. Steffen at that point and what I shared in the testimony today is that reference areas are always initially submitted as just an initial proposal, and they do go through a very thorough review process before they're accepted by the PSC. There are frequently changes. It's just kind of a working starting point, and if Mr. Voigt has concerns, they would certainly be considered.
By what criteria do you choose what areas you're going to use as reference points?
The species composition, the production, the slope of an area sampled within each ecosite. But then beyond that, we want to make sure we represent all of the dominant ecosites. The three dominant ecosites on the Voigt land are represented by our reference areas, and that's why those were selected as a starting point.
And so you say you use production as a primary criterion. Why would you end up choosing an area that has the lowest production on the ranch?
I have not reviewed the specific production of to make an assessment, to make a statement about how this site actually compares to his entire ranch, but I will say that some ecosites are more productive than others, and that the south end of the Voigt's ranch is, I think, less productive as a whole, and we need to also represent that.
You just indicated that you hadn't reviewed the production, but you also stated that that's one of the criteria you use to determine these reference sites. Did anybody look at the production?
Yes. What I was indicating with that is I didn't do a weighted analysis of all ecosites over all sample sites on Casey's land, comparing it to that one site. I did look at that one ecosite to make sure that, combined with the other sites as a whole, was representative of the variability of Casey's land. So to try to be a little bit more clear, I can't say that that one site in itself would stand alone and represent Casey's land. But it is a component, and when used with the other sites, that was the intent, to represent the variability of the Voigt land.
And when you say that, you mean that that site, along with the other nine sites you chose, represented the variability?
Our consultant did, to be clear. Our consultant, KDK Consulting, did. He spent a lot of time on the field to select these sites, and described to me, as he described it to me, that was his methods.
But the method used was such that the variability was represented by the nine initial sites selected, right?
That, in combination with other sites sampled on the state land that the Voigts considered to be part of their management unit. As described in the permit in section 2.4, the sampling methodology looked at the Voigt management unit as a whole, because conversations with the Voigts, they stressed that that's how they viewed their ranch. They have deeded land, they have state-owned land, and both lands are integral to their management.
And six of those sites were then taken out of consideration because they would be a part of the mine, right?
Correct.
And was the representative value of the remaining three sites assessed to determine if that was a fair representation of production on the ranch?
Yes.
Okay. And how was that done?
By conversations with the KDK consulting professional. He was involved in the selection of those reference areas because he spent a lot more time on the ground than I did. He was out sampling throughout the 2012 year. He on the ground was at every single site. So he was better able to make that decision.
Did someone look at specific numbers to make that decision?
Yes.
Are those numbers in the record anywhere?
They are in the permit, and all of the sampling results are included in that 2.4.7 section. Okay.
I refer you back to exhibit number 5, the livestock weight gain study. Can you tell me a little bit more about how the study was conducted?
With cooperation from a producer, a Coteau representative and this producer, landowner that grazed cattle on reclaimed land and nearby undisturbed land that they owned, they had a conversation. They decided that they would like to conduct a study assessing what it reclaimed land, what impact it had on the gains of cattle. So they weighed the calves going on and coming off.
Were the same calves grazed on the reclaimed land as were grazed on the undisturbed land?
No.
Were the same amount of cattle grazed on the reclaimed land as on the undisturbed land?
No, and that's why it's an average is calculated. The pounds per day, it was tracked and divided by the number of calves. They were part of both a commercial and registered herd operation, though, and that attention was paid to that detail to make sure that there wasn't some weight of genetics, that genetics didn't factor in to the results seen.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Because a producer that is raising a registered herd that is paying a lot of attention to genetics, one of the things they're already tracking is this average daily gain, which is what's reflected on the chart. And their breeding, their genetic program is focused on maximizing average daily gain. So they wanted to make sure that the livestock used on both situations, it couldn't be said that the genetics and then related to that, the average daily gain, just driven by genetics, would have caused the difference in the outcome.
So your understanding of the cattle's genetics is based on the average daily gains the producer monitored in these cattle over time?
My understanding is based on notes in the documentation of this study that documented the background of the genetic background or makeup of each herd, whether they were Red Angus or what they were, if they were a Red Angus cross with Hereford, that sort of thing.
And so you had an identical match of specific species or crosses based on genetics for each herd?
I can't speak to that because I wasn't involved in it, but based on the perusal of the records that I was given, it appeared that they were comparable herds.
With what degree of uncertainty?
I didn't run any statistics on it, but they, based on an overview, I would say I'm very confident, and that's backed up with the comments that I received from the employee that conducted the survey. He said the private landowner or the cooperator who owned the cattle was very happy with the gains that he saw on reclaimed land, and they decided not to do a follow-up study because there weren't any more concerns after these results.
What was the size of the pasture used for the reclaimed land?
I'm not sure.
What was the size of the pasture used for the undisturbed land?
I'm also not sure of that, but these pastures were large enough to support a herd rotated through an entire season, May through October.
Were they identical in size?
I doubt that.
When was the study done?
I don't see a date on this, but from memory, it was the early 2000s.
How many cow-calf pairs were involved in the study?
There again, I do not know. I wasn't the person involved in the study. I'm only basing this on the notes, and off the top of my head, I don't remember.
How did the reclaimed land compare to the undisturbed land prior to mining?
I can't speak to that because I didn't see any data on that.
So there was no assessment done as to whether the pasture that was undisturbed was better or worse than the other pasture prior to having been mined?
There was no vegetation assessment done to compare the two. It was based on a landowner being interested in this topic. The research was done, and the topic he was interested in was not so much species composition, but the effects that it would have on his bottom line to use reclaimed land. And the results satisfied his concerns.
Have you ever been participated in a peer-reviewed study?
Yes.
Would this study pass peer review?
No. It wasn't done for publication. It was done for the purpose to address a landowner's concern, and it was the study design included his comments, I guess, and his concerns drove the setup of it.
There was discussion of the testimony of Stephen Merrill and the soil survey that he had suggested, and you indicated that NRCS had already completed such a survey. Is that right?
Yes.
Are you referring to the survey conducted by Perry Sullivan at the Falkirk Mine?
Yes.
And the purpose of that survey was simply to create soil categories for the farmers there so that they could participate in federal ag programs, right?
I wouldn't put it as simply, because along with the soil classification program, he made new soil series and to describe those soils, and there is a lot of backup information that becomes part of the description, including expected productivity, slope class, use, manage the soil genesis, if you will, in this case, because it's reclaimed, the activities that led up to its creation. If a person were to go on to the NRCS web soil survey, there's a lot of information that was put together for these new soil series descriptions.
And that's based on the new soil types, as we'd call them, that were created by the mixing of the soils at the Falkirk Mine.
Correct.
Are the soils at the Falkirk Mine identical to the soil types at the Coyote Creek Mine?
No.
Will the soils at the Coyote Creek Mine be mixed in this exact same way as they were at the Falkirk Mine?
Methods will be similar. There will be a dragline operation. There will be a truck shovel operation. There will be respread operations. And all of the work will be done under the same regulations and standards.
But you're going to have different soil types there, right?
I can't predict how the NRCS would map them, but the physical characteristics and the pre-mine soil series are different between Falkirk and Coyote Creek Mine.
And so when you mix those together, it's going to be different than what was mixed together at Falkirk?
I would anticipate that. I can't speak for sure about any of that, though.
And the productivity, are you familiar with the study that was done by Perry Sullivan?
Yes.
Okay, and the productivity index that he used in that study was based on the essentially the same productivity index used for all of the original soil surveys?
Yes, yeah, same system, if that's what you're asking.
Right. And so the aspects of soil quality looked at were the same as those looked at when the original web soil surveys were done, or soil surveys were done?
I don't have specific knowledge, but my background information on a soil survey is that all the methods would be the same. So I would think so.
And were you present for Mr. Merrill's testimony?
Yes.
And do you recall that in his testimony, some of the soil survey criteria he was suggesting should be looked at were biological in nature?
Yes.
And is it your understanding that the original web or the original soil surveys did not look at biological characteristics of soil?
I don't believe they would have.
And nor would the Sullivan study?
No, but to create a soil profile, which is what I testified to, is what the soil survey did. The noting and testing for the biological component is a separate suggestion. So they're two separate ideas that Dr. Merrill proposed.
And so you understand that Dr. Merrill's proposition was not simply that one do a soil survey as Sullivan did at Falkirk.
Correct. I was just explaining that that one component is being addressed by the NRCS currently.
Did that, is it your understanding that the Sullivan study involved looking at anything other than the respread depth or the slope to create their classifications?
Based on the, I would probably describe it as a story that was put on the NRCS website. There was a summary of the project and the reasons why they did it. And so I'm only basing my testimony on reading that document on the internet.
And I would object to that testimony.
Object to, what are you objecting to?
Well, I was asking about her understanding of the Sullivan study, which I understood she was familiar with, and what she's testifying to now is hearsay that she read on the internet about the study.
I'll overrule it. It's essentially, it's already, I mean, been in. I'm not going to strike it.
Possibly to clarify, when I said I was familiar with the study, I have reviewed the results that the NRCS published.
Can I have you take a look at Coyote Creek exhibit number 4? And you stated in your testimony that Coyote Creek would restore the productivity of the native grassland on Mr. Voigt's property to as good or better production as prior to mining, right?
Yes.
Can I have you turn to page Roman numeral 2-D-10 of Exhibit 4?
Okay.
Was that B or D?
D. Are you familiar with the standard in these guidelines that the native plant species comprise at least 65% of the total composition by cover or weight?
Yes.
And so when you say that you intend to restore the productivity on Mr. Voigt's land, are you saying that you're going to comply with this guideline that at least 65% will be native grasses on his land?
You're asking me about productivity. You're saying productivity, but you're not asking me about productivity. You're asking me about the native species component.
If Mr. Voigt has 5% tame grasses on his land right now, is Coyote Creek going to restore his land such that it has only 5% tame grasses?
I can't testify as to what will happen 20 years from now in the field. I can testify to the methods we're going to use and the standards that we need to meet. The methods that we are going to use, as I expressed in my testimony, is to minimize at every step of the way the amount of introduced species that will be there, both through our seed selection and through the management of the newly reclaimed land. The standards, I can say that we can both read this sheet of paper and say that the standards allow up to 65%, but I can't testify as what will actually happen. I can just say that we will be minimizing with every method that we have minimizing the introduced species present.
So pound for pound, do you believe that a field that has 5% tame grasses is more or less productive than a field with 35% tame grasses?
I think that there's no way I can answer that because some native grasses are very much less productive than introduced species. Some native are more. I would need more information to answer that question.
Is that information contained in the mining permit anywhere?
No, I would need a more specific question to answer that adequately.
Are you familiar with the amount of tame grass that exists on Mr. Voigt's land right now?
Yes.
And are you aware that it is much less than 35%?
Yes.
And are you familiar with the kinds of native grasses that exist on Mr. Voigt's land right now?
Yes.
And if the composition of the grasses and plants on Mr. Voigt's land changes such that there's a significant increase in the tame grasses, do you believe his fields are going to be as productive as they are now?
I actually believe they would be more productive because with my knowledge, after reviewing the sampling results shown in here, there are many warm season grasses that are an important part of native grassland. However, they are low-producing species. So I feel I can state with quite a bit of certainty that the production would not be an issue, even if there was a large amount introduced.
You also indicated that there's a lack of evidence that subsoil thicker than 4 feet has an impact on yields. Is that right?
There's a lack of evidence that total soil depth, which is topsoil plus subsoil, greater than 48 inches, hasn't been shown by research to have an impact on productivity.
And what research are you referring to?
The paper that is published in the American Society of Mining and Reclamation literature review that I did, as cited in my testimony.
And so the studies that were conducted that you reviewed, were these conducted on reclaimed mine lands?
They included the wedge plot study that Dr. Merrill was involved with at Zapp, Stanton. They included a lot of information that was used to basically write the laws for our state and other states. They also included follow-up research that was done on the same plots after 20 years and 20-plus years by several authors on several plots. And they still didn't see any change in results, except that they actually found that less soil than the original studies showed as necessary. The follow-up study showed that less soil thickness was required to maximize production.
You're referring to the 2003 studies conducted by Merrill and others?
Those are one of the studies I'm referring to.
You're not saying that the depth of the topsoil does have an impact on productivity, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why it's required by law to salvage all topsoil and handle it separately, which is what we will do since we will comply with law.
And so when you say that you're going to restore the productivity on the Voight land, is it your testimony that you're going to do that specifically because you're going to comply with the rules and regulations of the PSC?
Can you restate? I'm not sure I understand what your question is. Or explain a little more.
Do you believe that by complying with the rules and regulations of the PSC, you will necessarily restore the productivity of the Voight land?
Absolutely, because the productivity standard, and if you're only talking about productivity, that's what I'm replying to. The productivity standard is that the reclaimed land has to be as or more productive.
That's all I have right now.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
Actually, I am going to ask permission for Jim Deitch to ask a question or two.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think just one, unless there's follow-up. Earlier, you discussed the alfalfa production on Casey's haylands, both uplands and some of the lowlands along Coyote Creek. I guess there's been a lot of discussion about that hayland along Coyote Creek, that what's on the alluvial soils and that. How much of that of Casey's hayland on the alluvial soils near Coyote Creek, how much of that will actually be disturbed by your proposed operations as depicted in NACC 1302?
None of it will. Our haul road will cross a hay yard near one field, but none of his hayland will actually be disturbed.
Okay, that's all I had on that.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Thank you, Your Honor, and Ms. Slav. This one doesn't really fit in with most of the rest of them, but I'm just going to get it out of the way. The first day, I believe you're here, right?
Yes.
There was reference made to some of the producers who farm some of the reclaimed land. I don't know if they were mentioned by name, so I'm not going to mention, since I think I know who they were talking about. But how do you respond to that, that you have one or more producers who are not set thinking that the production is very good?
I can't testify at all to Falkirk because I don't have any experience with the Falkirk situation. I believe I'm familiar with the situation. The one landowner that was named by Mr. Voight, I wasn't involved with managing the reclaimed lands at that point. I could provide hearsay type testimony, repeating what others told me. Would that be acceptable? I wasn't personally involved with it myself. I could speak from my experience when I was the one prior to that person being on reclaimed land.
Whatever you think makes a good response, and specifically, are the person or persons referenced farming land that has been bonded out, or are they farming land that is in the process of proving itself and maybe just wouldn't even be expected to produce fully yet?
That would actually, you're leading to what I think what would actually have been my point is the producer that Mr. Voight mentioned in his testimony was on new reclamation. To my knowledge, every year that he was farming, he received some first-year reclamation. In other words, the first year after the soil was respread, he was farming the soil. And as mentioned in earlier testimony today, we wouldn't expect production to be maximized on reclaimed cropland on the first year. That's part of the reason why there is a 10-year liability period that the mine is required to manage and collect data before applying to bond release. I don't know of anyone that operates on land that has been managed for its full 10 years that has problems with production. I don't personally know of any issues or complaints on that mature land.
Okay. What's the difference between an eco site and the reference point?
An eco site is used to describe an area of rangeland. It has a given soil texture, in other words, physical properties, landscape position, and characteristics. Also in the ecosite description, which was some of the information submitted as part of the exhibit, one of the reasons why that stack was so large is because I included the ecosite descriptions because I felt they were pertinent because we've been discussing it so much. In that ecosite description, it also includes what you would expect for species composition of that ecosite at climax condition, how it would change with management, the species makeup of the site, how you can change between the different stages of succession or with management of that site. There's a lot of really good information there.
Okay.
So a reference area then, the sampling of undisturbed rangeland is broken up to represent or weighted to represent those variable ecosites that are out there. And similarly, the reference area also needs to represent the different dominant ecosites. To make sure that the reference areas are representing what, for example, Mr. Voigt would have, we have to make sure that we represent his three dominant ecosites.
Okay, and you started with 9 reference points. 6 of them have been kind of ruled out because they're going to be in the mine site, so they're going to get disturbed, leaving 3. Is that correct?
Yes.
But those aren't set in stone, and that's something that still needs to be worked out with the commission?
Correct.
And Mr. Voigt can participate in helping make sure that he would agree that's a fair representation of his property as a whole.
Absolutely.
Can he get
more
reference sites than the 3?
Yes.
How do you negotiate if he feels that the 3 that you're feeling are accurate and he feels it's a little off? Can you do a couple more?
Yes, I would say that we could. Each reference site we have to make sure is managed in a way that it won't change negatively the species composition of that site. And so we want several options to choose from for sites in case there are issues with some. So we have sites on Casey's land. We have sites that are also on neighboring land. Management is somewhat similar between the Voigt land and the neighboring Unruh land. It would be up to the commission and possibly Casey would have input if sites on the Unruh land would be, if he felt that they would be adequate for use. But yeah, we could select more. At a certain point, kind of as Dave Bickle testified, more at a certain point we have what is necessary, but if Mr. Voigt had concerns, yeah, we'd take that into consideration and we could choose more.
Are you doing other reference points for the, as I recall, there's primarily 2 operators?
Correct.
In Coyote Creek. Are you doing other reference points to compare that land reclamation to, or are these the 3 for the whole mine site?
There are other sites because when the reference area sites were selected, we made sure that they represented the dominant ecosites on every single surface owner, including the surface owners that don't have a lot of surface area. There are several smaller surface owners as well, although there are primarily two. And the reference areas don't have to be unique for each landowner, as long as the vegetation demonstrated through sampling is comparable on the two, that we can show that they would be representative.
Okay. Mark Anderson recommended requiring 95% native grasses. Refresh me on the discussion that we had, whichever day it was, about Kentucky bluegrass counting as a native, if it was there in some proportion or not, and how that all works. And then also, did you testify earlier that you do not seed any tame grasses like Kentucky blue, or is this one that you do introduce some?
Kentucky bluegrass is not seeded. We don't seed any introduced species, but it is starting to be recognized by the community of researchers and people that manage native grasslands, that Kentucky bluegrass can be found throughout this region on undisturbed native tracks, and it's referred to by some scientists as becoming naturalized. In other words, it's so ubiquitous that even a healthy, desirable, functioning plant community often has a small component of Kentucky bluegrass present. I believe that type of thinking is what led to it being added to the standards to allow a certain percentage of Kentucky bluegrass, and the PSC staff would be better equipped to speak to that. But because of this naturalization of native or of Kentucky bluegrass, that is why if the reference area has it and that represents the pre-mine condition of the native grassland, that a similar amount would be allowed post-mine and considered naturalized or native.
But you're not going to seed any?
No. That's one of the species we're going to be managing to try to minimize and control.
In Coyote Creek Exhibit 6, like the third and fourth pages in, are these diagrams?
Yes.
With the yellow? The first sampling here shows 3% Kentucky bluegrass. The second one shows 62% Kentucky bluegrass. So in that case, what you say, am I understanding correctly, that you will see none, but if everything else met all the standards and there were some percentage of Kentucky bluegrass that did come back on its own, up to 35%, you could get approval, you would meet PSC standards, but you could not exceed 35%, even though it starts out with way more than that?
Generally speaking, I would say yes, but I need to throw in a few caveats to that. The 35% would include all non-native or all species that aren't native grasses, including native forbs. So it could be native forbs, shrubs, anything that volunteers that may or may not be desirable that isn't a native grass. But yes, if there was Kentucky bluegrass and it was evaluated that it also, the other criteria that seems like keeps getting overlooked is in the standards, it says that the introduced species can't have a negative impact on the use of the land. And so if the commission felt that Kentucky bluegrass at such high of a percentage didn't hurt the native grassland, technically it would be allowed, but that is something that would have to be weighed and considered, and I would guess that it wouldn't be something that would be viewed positively.
So when you evaluate, when you did these points, or Mr. Krabbenhoff did, and when we evaluate your reclamation years down the road, how many samplings do we take on a section of land, and how big are the sample sizes?
You're talking for the bond release applications?
As well as the pre-mine tests.
Each one of these sheets represents one of the sample sites that was taken prior to mining. I believe there's 33 total, although a person would have to count to make sure.
On 8,100 acres?
Yes.
Okay.
And those were selected by Mr. Krabbenhoff after extensive time on the ground to represent what was present prior to mining. His background, his experience is that he'd been a consultant, or he'd been hired by the NRCS to use this same methodology in their assessments. And using the NRCS methodology as the standard of being adequate or not, I would testify that he's very well-trained and technically savvy on this method to describe a site. On the reclaim side of things, we haven't, for Coyote Creek Mine, we haven't designed our sampling method for reclaimed lands, but I can testify to what was done at Coteau. There, I believe, on a pasture, and pastures, I think, are typically maybe a quarter to a half section in size. And on those, for production, I believe 15 to 20 frames are clipped, and that's a quarter meter frame. And that's where the samples are weighed, and that's part of the data collected. And then there's also what we call cover data that assesses the basal cover, and that information is used to assess the seasonality and diversity. Typically, production or cover could be used, but cover is often what is done. And there, I believe, oftentimes there's a couple hundred sample points for taken for that.
Okay, and now I'm going back to these same two. It just intrigued me that they're so much different in so far as Kentucky bluegrass that was discussed so heavily the other day. So if this were two different parcels of reclaimed land that you're looking at getting bond release on, and so one of them is at 62% and one is at 3%, on average you're under 35%. Would that be okay? You could bond both of those out, or would one be bonded out and one be rejected?
If they were in the same pasture and they were different samples within that pasture, and one sample happened to be on a patch of 62% Kentucky, but overall the whole pasture averaged fine, yes, it could be bond released. But the same could be said for pre-mine land. I could go out onto some of the pre-mine land at Coyote Creek Mine and find almost 100% pure stand of smooth brome. That doesn't mean the average of that landowner is 100% smooth brome. That's one sample point within that site.
Yeah, I was talking about different pastures.
Okay, if they're two different tracts, no, each tract has to stand alone.
Okay.
On bond release.
Did you say you see 9 different native species?
Yes.
Or that's your intention to?
Yes.
And are those mostly, I would assume that that's some of these that are found in these lists other than the Kentucky bluegrass?
Yes. The dominant species of our seed mix is similar to those found on the Voit Ranch pre-mining, with the exceptions being that we don't seed needle and thread or porcupine grass, which are two species that are often prevalent on the Voit Ranch. And that's because both of those species have sharp seeds that can puncture and injure livestock and make livestock avoid grazing them and cause issues. So those weren't ones that we selected as being desirable for the post-mined use of grazing.
And the reason for 9 is to get a diverse mix so that there's as good of production as possible in different seasons and different conditions?
Correct. We are trying to, the goal is to have high production, also high diversity, and to have not just a cool season species component, because one of the concerns, I think, with introduced species is that because they do most of their active growing during the early in the year when it's cool, they lose their nutrient value later in the year. We target our seed mix to make sure that when you hear seasonality standard, that's what that is referring to, that there has to be species that do their active growing early in the season and late in the season. And that's what helps protect the quality of the forage, that standard.
And did I understand right a couple days ago that of those 9, we require 4 of them to be 5% or more of the...
By production.
Total
correct.
Mix.
Correct.
As I page through some of these, I've only gone through about 5 or 6 of them, but I only see a couple that would meet that, and I wasn't looking at Kentucky Blue. I don't know if I was counting that. But so is that one of the things that when people talk about is good or better, that potentially the better is that there would be more native species of significant amounts?
Correct. That is one of the issues or one of the things that that measurement would be stating.
Can be patient here. Mr. Stefan pushed a lot of questions off on you. So. I discussed last week with Mr. Anderson the concept of averaging the soil suitable for plant growth, as opposed to having some areas where there's more and some areas where there's less. And so conceivably, if those plants wanted to really go down, there'd be some places where they could. Do you your best to keep this as even as possible when you reclaim it, or do you attempt to diversify that as well?
By our respread depths are really dictated by regulation or by law. We take samples of the spoil, and whatever that quality dictates is what we respread. So if it requires deep respread, that's what we have to put back. And we're projecting that most of the areas on the Voigt Ranch will require the full 48 inches.
And did you say that the average now is less in the areas you've sampled?
Correct. The average now is 32 inches.
And where do you get the soil to make up for that?
We have, in addition to the soil survey, which profiles and maps the soil in the top 5 feet. Because we identified that there would be a shortage of soil, in other words, most areas are going to require 48 inches based on law, but the Voigt surface only has an average of 32 inches, we have to make up the difference somehow. And so we are doing what is called a deep lift survey. Borings are taken, or an auger is used to take soil material going down to 120 inches or 10 feet to identify other material that meets subsoil criteria. So it's also suitable for plant growth.
I think it was Mr. Anderson talked about noxious weeds, and you have this land in a state of disturbance for a number of years, and I understand how you can be spraying during that time, spraying your topsoil piles and things like that, but then when you start reclaiming it before the grass really thickens, and during the subsequent years waiting for bond removal, bond release, how do you control the noxious weeds?
Spraying is the primary method. I believe he also told a story about pulling out weeds by hand, and I know that's been done at Coteau as well. It's something that the employees of the mine are definitely going to be watching. It's also something that the Public Service Commission, the reclamation staff, when they come out for their inspections, also is watching and monitoring for. And they also make sure that we're addressing the control of those noxious weeds. When we reseed our native grasslands, when we seed them, we often include a cover crop, and that's to help make sure that there aren't a lot of bare areas that are easy or susceptible to colonization by noxious weeds.
Mr. Merrill's testimony. Talked about a whole bunch of recommendations that he had for reclamation. Topographic reconnaissance for 1 or 2 years, tests to check for compaction, resurvey 3 to 4 years after soil is laid down, 4-foot borings to examine compaction, check for salinity and acidity. And I don't mean to completely speak for him. I'm rephrasing as well as I could take notes. My point here is, you heard that as well. He went on to say that following his recommendations would bring the reclamation program up to the standards of modern agriculture. Do you have differences of opinion with his ideas on these strategies, or do you agree, or what are your thoughts on those?
I believe, and this again, I'm going to paraphrase or restate my understanding of Dr. Merrill's testimony. When asked the purpose of all of these tests that he recommended, it was because he thought then that the land could be managed. You could identify different management practices that could then maybe be used. In other words, we do all these tests, then what do we do with it? And I believe the two management practices he mentioned that I remembered were deep tilling and planting deep-rooted crops to help with compaction. And also the perennial deep-rooted crops would also assist, and this is coming from myself, in the organic matter. They would improve the soil structure and the infiltration and overall soil health. And mines owned by North American Coal are already using those practices. So I would agree with his recommendations in that sense, that what should we be doing on reclaimed land if there's problems? If there's areas that are identified as areas that might have issues with compaction, let's try deep tilling. Or possibly plant a perennial on cropland, this would be, because native grass already has perennial deep-rooted species planted on there. Reclaim cropland, then possibly let's look at using deep-rooted either an annual cover crop mix or a perennial hayland mix for a few years to restore the soil. Is there any further information you're wondering on that?
Well, so to sum it up, my understanding was that he just came up with these ideas in, I think he said, October at a conference that he attended. But you're saying that several of the practices that he was recommending are already being incorporated?
Correct. Correct. They are being incorporated at current operations, and Coyote Creek Mine intends to use them as well as management tools.
And so do you agree with him that if the problems are detected at the 3 to 4 year stage, management can be changed to improve soil health?
Absolutely.
On the first day, we were told that once the topsoil and subsoil is replaced, there's really nothing more that can be done if there's problems. So are you, and would you say that Mr. Merrill, are contradicting that?
I believe that that really lays the groundwork for revegetation success, but there's a lot of follow-up management that can be done. The biological component is important, and those management tools can be used to as part of that biological toolkit.
I think, Your Honor, I've gone through all my questions.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I'll start up right with that then on the biological components, because there was a lot of talk about that and viewing soil as a system. Can you tell me how is that different from how you are viewing it and managing it today?
I view soil a little bit of the theory regarding reclamation, a little bit the theory of if you build it, they will come. If you put the soil resources back, the biological component, if managed correctly, will come back as well. By managed correctly, I mean if we seed the native species shown in our seed mix, if we put back those components of the ecosystem, the biological part of the soil will follow as well. At professional meetings on reclamation, some research has been done on the soil microbes, the living portion of the soil, and they show that that increases with time. There hasn't been a long history of that research, so I can't put specifics to that, but I haven't seen a study yet that hasn't said that the trend increases with time as the reclamation matures.
How else do you change the biological components other than through revegetation and the practices you're already doing?
The species seeded matter, the management of the species, since we're talking about reclaimed native grasslands primarily, since that's the resource that Casey has the most of, one of the key managements of that resource will be proper grazing of that resource, because that will affect the species composition, how the species changes over time, the amount of organic matter that is left that will be incorporated into the soil, the slope of the reclaimed land is important, because soil or water infiltration, we won't have extremely steep slopes present. That'll lead to infiltration. And water also will help with the freeze-thaw cycle to help break up if there are compaction issues, and also help with the growth and rooting of those plants. And all this leads to a stable functioning ecosystem eventually.
And I asked those experts a lot about how you measure that. And so I want to ask you too, what is the best measurement of soil health?
My opinion is productivity really does a good job of that, because and along with the other standards when we're dealing with native grassland of seasonality and diversity, because you might have 1 year all conditions being great that you can get productivity on an unhealthy soil if you get enough moisture and all the conditions are just right, but you won't have a productive, healthy stand of reclaimed native grassland with poor soil health.
Are there other ways you're aware of through your meetings and interaction with other soil professionals that you could use to measure other than productivity?
Some of the suggestions that Dr. Merrill made, they could be done. I didn't hear in any of his testimony anything that changed my mind, though, as far as productivity and the other standards missing the boat on not adequately measuring the success of the reclamation.
My recollection was he ultimately said that productivity was kind of the gold standard for measuring the soil health ultimately. But I'd have to revisit the record for that to be sure. Let's see here. Talking about Mr. Anderson's testimony, he talked a lot about the soil depth, and you've kind of covered that, so I understand your thoughts on that. But he talked also about diversity, and you and Commissioner Crispin talked a bit about the diversity. But help me summarize. I'm hearing you say that the diversity might be improved over what it is today. Is that correct?
It depends on your interpretation or how you measure diversity. There are different ways. When you look at the sampling results and count the total number of species present, I honestly can't say if we will or we won't. If you just do, there's 14 present pre-mine, will there be 14 present post-mine? Because in addition to the 12 species that we're seeding, a majority of our land will also be reclaimed using direct respread methods. So there will be this seed bank that I mentioned before of these seeds in the soil that will come back. And we've seen on reclaimed mine lands before under direct respread conditions, a lot of those native species come back. So I'm not sure if the same number will be there or not. What the diversity standard ensures and the seasonality and standard ensures that we have right now is that not only will there be a fairly large number of species present, but you can't have one or two species that make up most of the composition. You have to have four present in a significant amount.
So the diversity might be less on some areas where there was, say, 14 different grasses, and it might be less than that, but the mix of the cool versus warm might be stronger, and it might produce better health overall. Is that what I'm hearing?
We're talking a lot of mites, but based on what I've seen on other reclaimed lands, I would say the composition of the number of species that are present in a significant amount will likely increase. To use a specific example, if we flip through the sampling results, a lot of those sites only have two or three species present. Probably on average, there's only three species present that are present with 5% composition or four. The minimum standard on reclaimed land is four. So right there, that tells you that measurement of diversity we have to improve upon. I honestly can't speculate as to the total number. That may go up, it may go down. That's something I've never measured or tracked myself.
Okay, agreeing that we're talking mites, what's your commitment on diversity?
My commitment is to follow all of the standards and all the requirements by law.
And then in your testimony, you talked kind of towards the end of your discussion with Mr. Biella about a quantity and a quality measurement. Can you restate what it was you said, because I didn't have a chance to get
that
exact?
Yeah, I was trying to, because the revegetation success standards are pretty complicated. They're hard to just sit down and explain, but my basic layman version of what they're trying to assure is that the production and cover component of the standards, the intent is, or they assure that the productivity will be reestablished, and the seasonality and diversity would address the quality of the forage.
Okay. That's all for me. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Honor. Thank you, sir, for your testimony. It's we spend a lot of time in hearings talking about power lines and those kind of things, which are important, but I liked a good natural resource discussion. It's good education for everyone and updates and all that. I just have a couple general questions. How do you classify the difference between native grassland and in rangeland? I noticed that in the Indian Head Mine exhibit, we break it down, cropland, native grassland, and in hayland. In Coteau, we have it broken down, cropland, rangeland, hayland. I have in my mind what the difference is. I'm just curious what you think they would be.
We actually use the terms interchangeably.
Okay.
Rangeland is a more common term, but all of the standards refer to native grassland.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to clarify that up. So, okay, so that's pretty clean. And just to, maybe just to summarize some points that I thought I heard you hear in other questions is that there's a commitment that you're going to replace 48 inches of what I would consider good fertile soil, even though in some of those areas now there's only 36 inches.
We aren't committing to 48 inches everywhere, but we're committing to replace what the soil quality dictates. We're projecting, based on our sampling prior to mining, that it will likely be 48 inches in many areas, in most areas.
Sure, and as you get to a hillside, it's going to be less than it would be in the bottom, so you'll contour all that out, put it right back the same way it was. Do you have a gut feeling of why there seems to be so much concern that you're not going to do that in this permit and where you've done it in the past?
I would be speculating as to Mr. Voigt's personal feelings. What I have seen, though, is that...
I mean, is there something different about the land profile here or something that we're missing?
I think one of the unique things is that in many other permit areas, there's a lot of cropland present, and that's not so much of a long-term a result of long-term management strategies, and just the management is different. This permit, there's a small number of owners that take great pride, and rightly so, in their land, and they worked very hard to develop this resource that they have right now.
And maybe the high percentage of rangeland, native grassland, may be different in this than in other areas.
I think that's the primary reason.
Okay, and then just the last point. You said, I guess, two last points. You made a comment that you'll be removing some of the plant mix, which perhaps isn't good for grazing right now. Did I understand that correct?
There's two species that we aren't going to reseed. Some will likely occur because of directory spread, but we aren't going to seed it on purpose.
Okay, so you should be improving the quality of food mix, if you will, for the cattle by this.
That's the intention.
Sure. And then earlier in the hearings, there was some questioning about the current mix of vegetation doesn't even meet the reclaimed standards, something to that effect. Do you recall that line of discussion, questioning?
Yes.
Could you walk me through that again?
Of the 9 sites that were sampled on the Voigt deeded land, only 3 meet the current reclamation standards. And the main reason was, like we had discussed, that often these sites, there might be a large number of total species present, but many contribute just a very small percentage of the total composition.
So do you have any reason to have concern that if you follow everything the way you plan to do it, that you won't exceed the requirements that you're saying you're going to do?
I'm 100% confident that we will be able to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Biella?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Broughton?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have nothing, thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Chrisman?
I do. I missed one on the 9 native species that you reseed. Are they the same 9 all over, or in one place you seed these 9 and somewhere else it's a different 9?
No, they're the same 9 everywhere.
And Are they equal proportions, or are there four or five of them that you're trying to seed heavier because those are the ones that you're looking to get that 5% or more ratio?
Our seed mix, the percentages are based somewhat they are based on the desired outcome and what we want to see present. But if you were to just look at strictly on the percentage of what we're seeding, you wouldn't be able to probably ascertain what that goal is. It's because some species are very hard to reestablish, and the success rate of how much you seed versus how much you get was taken into consideration. And that was based on input I received from the sources I cited in my testimony. I went out and I got requested information from the local NRCS office. I talked to a person that's oftentimes cited in our state as being the expert at the ARS station, Plant Materials Center, on revegetation or restoring native grasslands. So I also considered his input on what the species should be and the composition of that mix as well.
Well, are there four or maybe five or six of them that you primarily want to emphasize that are the ones you're shooting to get the 5% or more on? Or would if you had a perfect catch, would they each be 11%?
I would say that that's going to vary by site because some are more adapted to the wet low areas. Some do better on the hilltops. It will depend somewhat on soil texture as well. So we seed these, and then to a certain extent, Mother Nature will dictate which species will be able to outcompete the others. With that said, we still have to meet the diversity requirements, so the same four won't and shouldn't be dominant on every single reclaim site. But the same, but we would need four everywhere that were present 5% by production.
And the specific nine, they're part of the mine plan that's part of the record?
Correct. That's part of the permit, section 422.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
No questions.
Commissioner Kolk?
Just one, Your Honor. I believe I have an answer that I think in my mind is correct, but I want to see what your thoughts are. Where would you classify a field of alfalfa? Would that be a cropland? Would that be rangeland? Or would that be hayland?
That is hayland.
No question about it.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Biel, anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. You can step down.
That concludes our case, Your Honor.
Okay. I think we'll break for about 10 minutes before advisory staff presents its case.